This is not the sound of a stream running through the mountains. It's water from a leaking pipe trickling down a stairway. That's not a frog splashing into a lake. It's a piece of sheetrock falling into a puddle on a kitchen floor. And that's not a hiker taking a deep breath of mountain air. It's a homeowner gasping at the sight of a $12,000 water damage repair bill. 40% of homeowners have experienced water damage. Protect your home with the Moen Smart Water Monitor and Shutoff. Moen.
This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
Pritchard-McLean, and you're listening to the Who Are You Wearing podcast. Each series, I chat to a selection of the most stylish people ever about their wardrobes and their journey through fashion. Episode 13 is our penultimate episode of Series 3, and it's with presenter, activist, and influencer Megan Jane Crabb. Megan is the queen of colour and, wait for it, a former teenage emo. Yes! I'm thinking of renaming the podcast at this point to I Was a Teenage Emo and Now I'm a Very Stylish Adult. Although Megan presents a new perspective as to why I always end up chatting with former emos, and I respond very badly. We bond over a shared fashion history of inheriting bin bags of clothing and a deep love for the cycling short co-ord outfit. Bring them back. It is what geriatric millennial women want. Bring them back. We also have a very open conversation about our thoughts and feelings about being, well, it's mainly me who does a lot of the chatting, so I won't speak on behalf of Megan, but we do talk about my feelings about being a plus-size woman, and a sort of reluctant spokesperson in this world. A full disclosure, I thought about cutting out the conversation because it's pretty raw and very real for both of us, but I have decided to keep it in. Because I don't know what, I was like, you know what, it feels disingenuous to take it out when we spent so much time talking about it, so it is in there. Megan is such a wise, thoughtful woman. She's really considered in all her answers, and this is just a very lovely listen. Please enjoy me asking Megan Jane Crabb, who are you wearing?
Do you remember what a fashion wheel is?
Do I ever?
Did you have one?
I always wanted one, and but I'd be like peering over the shoulder of a more fortunate friend who had one, and it just looked like the most fun, to the point where I'm probably going to go on. You've reminded me again, I'm going to go on eBay, I'm going to get one.
You absolutely should. I remember I must have been maybe like three or four, and my parents found one at a boot sale, and for like an entire summer that was just me day and night just scrawling over this fashion wheel. For people who don't know what a fashion wheel is, I guess it's like a sketch outline, like this giant wheel, and you can turn the segments of it to make a different top and a different bottom, and then turn it again, and you kind of like sketch over a piece of paper so you get then a picture of the outfit. And I would just make every single combination possible. I would cut out the like doll figures, stick them on the wall. I was obsessed. I have always been. I don't know, I guess it's just the expression and the colour.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that's, you've definitely got the vision and the eye, but how was it showing up in how you dressed yourself? Or was it a thing that it was, how did you feel about fashion in relation to you?
I would say that as a child, I didn't really have much choice. It was very much a hand-me-down household. There was a girl, like a slightly older girl who lived in the same town, and I would get these like bin bags of her clothes when she was done with them. I remember there was one pair of like bright green floral pattern jeans, and I clung onto those. I was so sad when I outgrew them. But yeah, I have memories of certain pieces of clothing, and they're always the bright, out there, very extra pieces that I remember. But otherwise, it's what you got, you know?
Yeah, I remember that. I grew up in North Wales, where I live near there now, and there was a caravan park near where I grew up, and there would be a family who came from Liverpool, and they would give me this bin bag of clothes every few months. And especially because at the time, I think with the internet now, it's a little bit easier, but we didn't have access to big, like, chain shops. So suddenly all these, like, exotic clothes would be coming from Liverpool or Manchester. And again, it was a pair of floral jeans where I was like, oh, my God, I've seen Americans wear these on the television. This is a huge deal for me.
Yes, Lizzie McGuire has this pair.
Were you ever put in anything that you hated then?
Ooh, that's a good question. I imagine so, but I don't have the bitterness in me yet. I have quite a lot of stored bitterness about things that I loved so much and my mum got rid of, obviously because I'd grown out of them or I just worn them out. There was one particular pair of like white sandals that I had when I was 4 years old, and I ended up vomiting all over them. We went on holiday, I couldn't take the plane, I vomited all over the sandals, they were wrecked, she threw them out, but I have never forgiven her to this day. Bitch threw away my sandals.
Can't be trusted. If you know what, you shouldn't have people like that in your life. Cut toxicity like that out of your life, mate, you don't need it. Well, if you haven't got anything that you didn't like, is there anything you remember wearing as a kid, and maybe an outfit or a particular item that you loved and you just never wanted to take off?
I got one year for my birthday a two-piece, a co-ord. It was fuchsia pink, and it was like cycle shorts, like spandex stretchy pink cycle shorts with a matching long cami with a split up the front of it. Not all the way, it wasn't like flapping about over the chest area. But yeah, it felt like very grown up, it felt very pop star, very risque. And so I had the little shorts and the flowy top, and yeah, could have lived in it.
That I think we're a similar age, because so much of what you're saying that you're excited by fashion-wise is exactly what I was into. Those co-ords, man, I absolutely lived for. It'd be a legging or a cycling short, and then some kind of top that... I remember having one that was like a crop top, and then it had lace over the top of it so you could see your tummy, but your tummy wasn't out. And I felt like a pop star.
And you know what? It's what's in now. Like, are you doing the 90s trend now?
No. Do you know what? It's too... I think it's... I really interestingly did a podcast with a fantastic woman called Rachel, who is like a slightly older lady who's just the most stylish person in the world. And she says, I think you can't, when you go vintage, you can't do the era that you grew up in. She said it's too, she says, I think it looks aging if I do like 80s, but I can do 70s and I can do 90s. But she's like, I can't do the bit that I was young and experimenting with fashion in. So for me, that's my reason for keeping away from 90s stuff. Also, just don't think I have the physique for so much of 90s fashion. Was not meant for like big knockered short women.
Oh, the spaghetti straps.
So unforgiving. Yeah. Are you though? I've seen you experiment. You're very on trend though.
I mean, I'm embracing it. I've seen these people on the internet who've like transformed their entire bedroom into a 90s haven with a freaking phone that looks like a pair of lips. Like, we haven't done that, but you know, a double denim, a little strappy here and there. I'm here for it.
I'm so jealous of you and your ability to chameleon with trends but keep what you do is I'll say it, mate. It's second to none.
Oh, that's very kind.
No, but it is true. It's here. And it's also fucking irritating. That's why I looked down, because I was like, that's so annoying that I can't do that. So when you were growing up as a teenager then, what were the big trends? And were you, as a teenager, were you trying to assimilate? Or were you enjoying playing with the things? Or were you completely trying to do something different?
Okay, so the fashion takes an unexpected turn in the teenage years. And I transform into queen of the emos. Maybe that is predictable, actually. Like, if you know me, you're clearly like, oh yeah, she has some identity issues. She clearly wants to stand out a bit too much. Must have been an emo kid. I was full all black everything, multiple studded belts, fake lip piercing, spiky black hair, fringe over the eye, you know, you name it. I was about that life for a good few years.
Yeah. Now then, you're adding to my theory that everyone my age that I ask on this podcast who's got great style now was a teenage emo. And yet I know from the odds, yes, it was a big subculture, but in my school, there was like, in a year of 200, there was maybe 10 of us. Like, we was in the minority. And yet when it comes to asking people on this podcast, because they are incredibly stylish adults, they're fucking all emos, mate. Every single one of them.
Right. But is it, or maybe the correlation is just people you find interesting, and something about if you're an emo kid, it's because you're a bit of like, well, you're either different or you want to be different. You think you're different, right?
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. Yeah, but but I think I've got people of all different sort of styles on here now as adults. Maybe there's a running theme that I sort of, that I'm drawn to. You're ruining my theory by calling it out with actual sort of like scientific rigour, and I'm not here for it, actually. That's not what this is about.
Sounds fine. It's your podcast. I'm just on it. I apologise.
Did you have a rebellious phase going up, and would we have seen it in what you wore, or was that the emo phase?
Oh, that was probably the emo phase, but it was failed rebellion because my parents were very much like, do whatever you want. You can't get anything actually pierced, but if you want to look this way in public, if you want to wear a giant fucking black and red petticoat whilst we walk the dog, then that is fine. So yeah, the rebellion failed, but yeah, that would have been it.
Also, I had one of those fake lip piercings because you can move it into God bless Claire's Accessories for saving our relationship with our parents and giving us those ones that you could move kind of everywhere,
right?
And it was in my eyebrow for a bit, it was in my nose. Ooh. It was in my lip.
Was it a black one?
It was actually a silver one, because I was very into loads of silver rings as well, so I was sort of trying to tie it all together. Thinking about your style now that we see, when did that start showing up? Because it's fair to say that the like color riot that you are now is probably not there on a teenage emo, right?
No, I have been a very all or nothing person all my life, so I was the biggest emo I could be, and then I catapulted from that to being a rainbow vomit explosion. And at first I went like all kind of neon, like rave, just, yeah, all the brightest I could find. And then I kind of segued into a more pastel, fairy princess, My Little Pony. And now I'm just, I would say actually my colour has calmed slightly. I'm more a fan of just a vivid, a strong colour, a statement colour. But I'm not against a white here and there, or even a touch of a black now and then.
See, I've never seen you in black, but I saw you look sickeningly beautiful in white the other day when you did that. Is it Rihanna?
It was Rihanna.
It was a Rihanna. Oh my God. I wanted to weep. You look so incredible. It was so nice. And also, I was like, show my partner. I was like, look at this. And he was like, wow, she looks amazing. I was like, I know. And I was like, and she can pull off fucking white as well. So it's like, you're not even avoiding these like neutrals because they just don't suit you. It's like, oh yeah, no, I can pull that off as well. I just choose not to. I was like, kill me.
All right, we're going to get you in some white. I don't believe this self-deprecating anti-white attitude.
I I promise. Maybe it's my internalized hatred of being like a privileged white person, but I promise. It just doesn't do anything for me. But that does sound like something I'm repeating that my mother would said. I want to ask you about hair and makeup, because again, it's always so beautiful. Do you think about hair and makeup as part of an outfit?
Yeah, kind of. I'm actually quite lazy with my hair because I spend a huge amount of time making it the colour that it is, so then I don't appreciate having to do something else to it. I think that is in itself the style of it. Makeup, I also had a relationship with where I was way too attached to. I was the kind of young teen or like early 20s, very low self-esteem, wouldn't answer my front door unless I had a full face of makeup on kind of girl. And then had this kind of wake-up moment and stopped wearing it entirely, and now have managed to bring it back more as just fun artistry and, you know, playing with even more colour. How much more colour can I fit on my face? and I don't care if I'm without it, so that's nice. It's balanced.
Yeah, it feels like you're meeting on your own terms these days.
Yeah, I do try to, and I think for anything, you know, we can't kid ourselves into thinking like, oh, it's entirely for me, because realistically, if there was no other people in the world, if no one could see me, I would not be spending an hour and a half putting crap on my face. So it's not like an entirely empowered thing. I'm not sure that's possible in this climate and this like world that we exist in. But it is more so for me than you know, feeling like I had to for all those years.
Your hair, it's always a statement, but it's changed colours a lot. When we look at you and see your hair, it's probably the first thing you see. It's incredibly impactful and always has been, as long as I've been aware of you and watching you like a creep from the shadows. But does your hair tell us anything about you and where you are in your journey?
I think it, in previous years, has told you that I had a lot more time than I have now. Because, first of all, I've always done it myself. Mum, if you're listening, I know you help with the back sometimes, but it's always been an at-home job. And so when I used to do these ridiculously extravagant five different colours and highlights and ombres, I had a lot more time. And actually the pink just lasts the longest and is like the easiest of the colours to maintain.
Okay. That's what we're seeing about the journey is bitch is busy.
Bitch wants to make as much impact with as little effort as possible.
Okay, great.
What's your hair been before?
So I'm like quite fair, mousy kind of colour. So I dye it darker brown. And then I've got this sort of white streak here. And I've had this exact positioning for about 10 years.
What?
And when I was like, sometimes I'll put like a wash in it and it'll change the colour of it. So while I was doing a tour where I had like all yellow sequins, I had it yellow, like bright lemon yellow. And I've had it before where I've had it like purple or blue or whatever. But I've stopped playing with the colours as much in it. And I've had different, since I was basically 16 or 17, I was like, I'm going to get a haircut that I want. And I like designed this haircut and took it into the hairdressers. And they were like, we're not going to give you this. Because they kept being like, you want highlights, yeah? And I was like, no, I want a chunk of white and then my fringe to go over it dark. So I was going like full emo and I was like, I want a chunk of white here and I wanted a chunk of white somewhere else so I could do stuff with it and it would look different. And they were like, you want highlights? I was like, no, I don't want highlights. This is what I want. And I want it to be like white blonde. And they like, to the point where they were like, we might have to get you to sign a form to say that you won't sue us if it's because of how I described it. And then they did it and they were like, that looks amazing. I was like, I fucking know it does. I knew this would look good. And then I remember going into school and I remember this boy who was like, a boy who just didn't seem to notice when, oh my God, you look amazing. And I was like, it's that thing of like, yeah, this really feels like me. And I do look amazing. Because before that, I just had mousy hair and it literally came down to my bum. It was like layers, but it touched my bum at the back. And it was just sort of like nothing. There was just a lot of it. And then getting a haircut, I was like, oh, I feel like me. And I'm showing someone something with my hair. And that became a really like, I think my relationship with my hair is as important, if not more important than my relationship with my body. If I think about it in terms of my self-esteem, like if my hair goes, I'm like, I've got nothing. Can I tell you about my plan for aging? Since you've asked about my hair. So I'm very excited to go grey. I'm really excited for the like perceived wisdom it's going to give me. And my dream is that it'll go in different patches, but the dream is I go grey and then I can have like the photo negative of what I have now. And I'm going to dye this dark and have the rest of it as a big like white bob. So the reverse of what I have now is how I plan on aging this haircut.
Oh, it's incredible.
Out.
Yes. You've got it figured out.
It's so depressing that, like, yeah, found this haircut, found this style, she'll commit to it forever. But you can't go wrong with a bob, man. It's just as easy to look after and works for me. So no one ever asked me about my hair and I love talking about it, so thank you very much for that.
Anytime.
Little sojourn. So self-indulgent of me. Because you, like I say, the one of the many magic things about you is, to me, I'll see an outfit or a piece of clothing that will look like some, even if you're not wearing it, this is how you know, like, true style would look like something, I'm like, oh, that looks like something that you would wear. But you manage to stay on trend whilst keeping this you-ness to everything that you have, which I think is the impossible bit. So some people, I think, are on trend but they never look stylish because they're not bringing anything of themselves to the equation, whereas you are so good at that. So I wanted to know, are there any trends that you have tried to pull off but it's just not happening?
Ooh.
Because also, as someone who I think I came to you through a wonderful Sophie who's done this podcast, Sophie Hagen, and you're, like, you know, part of the body positivity movement, and usually when I ask people about trends, they will pick something that is meant to be unflattering for a certain kind of body type. And I know I would be like, well, halter necks because I've got massive boobs and actually quite big shoulders and it just doesn't do anything for me. But I wonder if you are someone who has done the work so brilliantly that you don't listen to that kind of stuff about, well, I can't go in that trend, I would have to do, you know, in magazines where they would go, how to pull off the whatever trend, and they would have your body type and which part of it you're allowed to play with. So I wondered where you were with all that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I remember, it wasn't even that long ago, there was this one article I came across that basically said, crop tops, if you have anything but a flat stomach, don't even try this trend. And I was like, what? And that was like maybe 5 years ago, and that's, you know, how much we've developed in terms of body diversity and size acceptance and things. But yeah, for it's really hard for me to say, like, that has something hasn't worked, because I don't have the same standards anymore. And for the most years, I never would have gone near bodycon, for one, or crop tops or anything low-waisted, anything that would emphasize the middle area of my body was a no-go. But I just don't have those eyes anymore, and I'm not seeing it through that lens. I just think everything is for everyone. If they make it in your size, then it's for your body type. Fight me.
Yeah, totally. It's so nice, actually. It's because crop tops in again, but how the conversation has changed in that fairly small in terms of fashion cycle is so reassuring, because the darkest parts of me think that things will never really change and they'll just let us win very small amounts of ground and hate one part of ourselves less, but convince us that we need to change or rebrand. It's actually about health. It's not about thinness. It's about health, that kind of thing. But I feel like seeing so many gorgeous people of all sizes in crop tops, which I'm seeing, I'm like, I feel like we might be getting some ground.
I think you are very right in what you said about just the problem shape-shifting. I think diet culture and beauty standards are fucking fantastic at just growing new heads every time you chop one off. That's how they stay profitable. That's how they keep working. I would say at the moment, we've made strides in terms of some size acceptance. We're still a way off of, like, radical fat liberation. And we've gone backwards, I think, in terms of like face beauty standards, what with the massive, like, makeup culture and all of the internet. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a freaking, it's that weighing lady, and it's just always tipping. It never feels like you're really winning. And I spend so much time as well questioning, like, am I part of the side that's weighing down? Because in my ideal world, really, like, we don't give a fuck. We don't give a fuck what we look like at all. We don't really care what we're wearing, as long as we're comfortable. And I'm going to say industries that we're in, the public-facing industries, It is still about what you look like a huge amount. And even if you're there saying we should care less about what we look like, and hey, you're good enough, and you're good enough, and you're good enough, you're still being perceived first and foremost on your appearance. I find existing in that contradiction quite challenging. I don't know if you find that.
Yes, because, you know, your purest self is like, fuck you. Sometimes I feel like because I am not necessarily, and I have loads of privilege in, you know, I'm on the smaller size of fat, you know, I'm able-bodied, I'm white cis, all that stuff, already have all that privilege. But I still feel like there's a part of me that feels that I have to try even harder than people who are straight-sized and very conventionally beautiful to show that, like, well, I can still hold my own. I know I don't look like that, but, like, I'm still... And also, there's a pressure to, like, unashamedly take up space when you don't necessarily... Like, that's all of that's loads of effort that's not being put on people who conform to everything that these businesses and parts of society say that they need to. It's just... It's all headspace, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you make the effort and you feel like you're playing the game and you're kind of holding your own, as you said, but you're still playing on those terms. They're still playing on shitty terms.
Yeah, because part of me, like, I love dressing up for an occasion. Like, I find dressing up so fun, and I love hair and makeup and jewellery and silly clothes. I love all that. But then as soon as you start being like, I don't know, as soon as there's anything other than pure joy...
Mm.
I don't think I've ever been to anything where I've just felt pure joy about what I'm wearing for the whole evening. Even if I love what I'm wearing, there'll be a moment when I'm like, oh, this is a bit, you know, or like, oh, you see yourself sat down or someone takes a picture from a certain angle and then you're like, oh, it's still there. Even when I think this is all for me, it never really goes. Well, you know, even just bringing like a lipstick in your bag to top up, you're like, who's that for? Like, I can't see my face, so who's that for? It's really hard, isn't it, to like exist in something you know is toxic on your terms. It's just really difficult.
It is. It's really hard. And I also think we can't be too hard on ourselves about it. Like, I really appreciate when I find someone who we can have this conversation about the contradictions and how we're navigating it. But I also don't want either of us to feel shit for like navigating a system that we didn't ask for. We're just, you know, trying our best.
There aren't many people I feel like I can have this conversation with. But I also feel like trying to do it on your own terms. And for me, that's being a slightly fatter woman and taking up some space and wearing things that maybe aren't traditionally, I love a leotard, you know, like anything that's basically a sequin swimsuit, you'll find me in it. And I didn't realise that was I'm just wearing what I like. And then people pass comment on it in a way of being like, it's very empowering to see a woman who looks like you do that. And you suddenly become, I don't know, there's an element of like almost spokesperson fatigue where I feel like you're sometimes held to very high standards. And sometimes you don't, sometimes it feels hard to say out loud. You find it hard and you find it tiring and actually you don't feel great. And, you know, you spent the whole, whatever, that TV record or that gig, actually all you were thinking about was this part of your body. And then someone made a comment about it on Instagram that was meant to be lovely, but, and you know, now you can't ever look at that picture again. But it feels like you can't, if you are visibly taking up space in an unconventional manner, you can't ever outwardly say it's fucking hard and I'm struggling. Like, I feel like I'm letting people down.
I think you're going to get a lot of people reply to exactly what you just said, saying thank you for saying that, because I know it feels like you can't talk about that, but that is so real and that is so felt. And also just the fact that it shouldn't always have to be about that. Even if you have chosen to wear the sparkly leotard that's like out there or whatever, that's not what's got you there. Like, it's your talent. That's why you are there. It's you. And I don't know, I would like to also get to a point where it is just about that and that isn't the first thing that people notice. But I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, and that's real. I maybe relate in a slightly different way. Like, you mentioned the Rihanna dress earlier, which my mother lovingly referred to as a fishing net. She said, you went out in a fishing net the other night, which I did. It was just a pure see-through net dress. And I just wore like nipple covers. I didn't wear a bra or anything. And I didn't think much of it. Like, those are just my boobs, whatever. And then obviously when I posted it, I was flooded with messages just being like, oh my God, you've shown what real boobs look like. My nipples face downwards as well. Oh, I've never seen this. And on the one side, it's like, that's lovely, and I'm glad to have done that. But on the other side, it was like, I just fucking wanted to look like Rihanna, and I actually didn't want that to be about that. There's duality.
And that's the other thing, is why it's tricky, is because we, like, well, I'm not going to speak for you, but I know I would have wished there was someone who looked like me when I was growing up so much, and it's an honour, and it's like, you know, it's something that I do take seriously, but to the point where I think, like, so I try not to buy anything that's, but I try to only use small businesses, and for the first 6 months of last year and this year, it'll be nothing that's new to the world. So it's like holding yourself to these standards, but then you set this bar for yourself and you're like, it's hard enough. Why are you doing all this? But it's also because sometimes it feels like sometimes people who are trying to do the right thing are the only ones who are held to the standards. You know, the people who are like endlessly pushing out stuff and, you know, selling the lollipops and the teas, and then also, you know, women of colour being paid nothing to make their stuff in their factory. Like, it feels like it's all in or all out, right? And I think I know which side I want to be on, but I'm operating in a world where that is not very easy to do. But easier for me because I have money as well, and then you feel guilty when people are like, where did you get that? And you're like, I paid what would have been unaffordable to me 3 years ago for this one item of clothing. That's the truth.
Real. Or I could spend 4 hours on a Saturday trawling like secondhand shops, and I was able to do that. Yeah, no, I hear you. So at the moment, with the sustainability conversation, I probably slip up, or I allow myself to slip up like three times a year, maybe. And other than that, it's all secondhand. God bless Vinted and Depop, and occasionally eBay. But it is again, in our industries, when you're expected to wear a different thing to every single thing and, you know, make an impression with your outfits, the more my kind of career, I guess, progresses in that direction, the more challenging it is. And again, still a lot easier for me than it is for other people. But, you know, someone made a really interesting point to me the other day about the sustainability conversation and fast fashion. And they said, have you ever thought about how even in sustainability, the conversation is quite gendered, in that the onus, the responsibility falls on, well, women most of the time, and the things that we see as feminine. So fashion is seen as feminine, so it's seen as frivolous, so it's seen as less important, therefore get rid of that. And no one is saying, oh, all those Xboxes and PlayStations, etc., and drones, they're terrible for the environment. Let's fix that. Again, I'm not saying sustainable fashion is not the way or not a good thing. You know, I do it, you do it, we try. But it was a really interesting point.
Wow, I'd never thought about that before. That is illuminated, because, yeah, you're right. Fashion is inextricably linked to the feminine. And, you know, and again, because it's one of the few places where women or femme people get to express themselves and can be celebrated for feminine traits or qualities. God, that's so interesting. Right, well, that's going to be rattling around my head for 3 weeks now.
Oh, God. Go and listen to someone who knows what they're talking about, though, because now I'm having visions of people being like, why the fuck is she talking about that? She doesn't know anything. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I know very little. It's just someone said it to me.
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. It's suggested that brands avoid using sound effects in podcast ads. And remember to speak in a chill tone. Well, here's a suggestion for everyday life. Tap into the Weather Channel app. It's loaded with insights that help you manage your allergies, breathe easy, and
use your outside voice.
What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
is the oldest item of clothing that you had for a really long time that you still love?
I don't know if they're the oldest, but probably my most loved and most worn are a pair of baggy patterned jeans that I have worn so much, so often on the internet that people started to like tag me in things like, oh my god, these are the Megan jeans. And then I saw someone selling a pair on Depop and they had said in the caption, as worn by Megan J. Crab. I was like, what? That's how you know I have worn the fuck out of these jeans.
That is so, so great. The Megan jeans. I love that. The Megan jeans. I'm so jealous. I've got to get an item of clothing that I wear, like a Kiri something or other. But although people do tag, someone tagged me into something the other day and was like, I've copied your outfit from The Weakest Link. And I was like, fair play. I don't know how you found it all, but yeah.
It was the exact one.
It was very similar. It was very, they obviously had a very similar jumpsuit and they put like a similar top underneath it and tagged me in to be like, I've dressed like you going out, which was, I don't know. It's a very, I still struggle getting used to stuff like this. It's obviously very nice and very flattering and very fun. I understand like the silliness of it, but also it's a bit like, because you're always you, right? So you're like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, well, I'm sick of me. Why do you want to look like me?
Yeah. Is there an era that you wish you had lived through just for the fashion?
Just for the fashion, not the, like, politics or how they treat people. I would rock the fuck out of, like, a Bridgerton era. I know that's not the technical era, but that's, I guess, 1800s, like, rich lady, many layers, corseted, skirted. Like, I would rock it.
You would look absolutely incredible. Where they had to build, like, you know, another bum on your bum.
Yeah! Oh, my gosh, yeah. And people are, like, passing out from the heat of all the layers and the corsets. Yeah, I'd look great. Feel terrible, look great.
Have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever gone for a full sort of like pomp and circumstance corset?
No,
layers?
I haven't. The closest I got was, this is wanky. I went to the Bridgerton premiere and it was, you know, theme Bridgerton. So I did kind of like a this era take on Bridgerton. So I had like a fashion corset, not a real one, and like a puffy sleeve top and a cage skirt.
I saw that. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, I loved it, but it was, yeah, it was very, like, a half-hearted Bridgerton. It was still quite comfortable.
And there was nothing about the outfit that was half-hearted. Please take that back immediately.
Sorry.
Have you got an item of clothing that you put on and you instantly feel amazing? And it can be a certain, like, an actual one piece, or it can be, like, I feel great when I'm in an oversized hoodie.
You know what? I feel really good when I lean more into what's traditionally seen as like a masculine silhouette. So like an oversized shirt with a pair of jeans, because I spent so long being like, ooh, like My Little Pony looking like a doll. Like, ooh, like everything has to be floral and shapes and curves and blah, blah, blah. So when I just let myself wear like a baggy pair of jeans and an oversized shirt and I just like have my hair up and just the ease of it and the way it more allows you to move through the world. And also, unfortunately, the way it brings like less harassment when you're out in the world, probably adds to feeling good in it, you know?
Mm. Oh, that's so depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I can't think about it too much. I'll get sad. Tell us about your journey with shopping.
Try to get it all secondhand. I remember when I was younger, going clothes shopping to like Matalan was a real treat, and it would be like end of summer, you're starting a new year, my mum's saved up a little bit of money, I can go to Matalan and I can choose like three or four things. And I looked forward to it so much. And then naturally, as I became a grown up and gained some of the financial privilege that I have, I went really overboard and I was the ASOS haul, spend hours every weekend scrolling, order everything, wear it once, never wear it again. Really went overboard until I started learning about fast fashion and how corrupt and unethical it all is. People like Venetia LaManna and Arja Baba like really opened my eyes, and I just couldn't do it anymore. It just, the guilt of like, oh wow, actual people, mainly women, mainly brown women, are suffering so that I can wear a sparkly outfit once and feel good. And that just doesn't add up for me. And then I, in an all or nothing fashion, went cold turkey, stopped buying anything, even secondhand, because I was like, no, I have some making up to do, I will buy nothing. And then everything I wore had like pit stains, and like faded designs, and I was like, oh dear, this isn't the middle ground. And then I got back to secondhand apps, and yeah, I try to only use secondhand apps, which, or rental sites in more recent years for, you know, fancy events. You can, well, I can rent things in my size quite easily. You know what gets me is that if all clothing companies stopped making clothes today and we all just shared what we already have, we would still be fucking swimming in clothes. We would still be abundant. Like, the world does not need any more new clothes. And I think about that a lot. Do you think about that a lot?
With clothing, because I've opted out pretty hard of, if I buy anything new, it's not fast fashion. I try to be really thoughtful about, right, well, I need some new pants. I'm going to try and find the most ethical pants that I can. It's totally, in a very bad way, out of sight, out of mind for me. So I'm not even thinking about the stuff being made, because I'm like, oh, well, I'm doing my bit and curating my corner of the world, when actually I should be thinking about that stuff more.
No. You are doing your bit. Like, you're doing your bit. And also, I think it's that... that illusion, right? Like, you thinking more about it isn't actually going to help the problem. And also, like, as an individual, it is an illusion that our individual decisions, whether it's about plastic bottles or fast fashion, is going to fix the problem. It's not individuals, it's giant corporations. We know that. Yeah. So no, Kiri, I don't want you to live in guilt about the fast fashion.
Do you shop only when you need stuff, or are you always, like, perusing?
If I'm alone of an evening, I'm generally perusing. I have got a lot better at, you know, do I love this? At this point, if I've got the basics covered, if I don't love it, even if it's secondhand, I don't need it. That could be someone else's favourite thing and I'm taking it away from them if I get it. So I'm better at that lately. But yeah, I'm a sad shopper. I'm a lonely shopper. Yeah, by myself shopper. For sure. I'd like to say I'm working on it, but you know what? There are some things about myself that I'm not working on, and I'm not sorry about it.
Yeah, because I feel like I've put enough around it. Like, I'm like, well, you're not buying new stuff. You know, like, I'm not buying stuff like that I don't want. I'm not just endlessly clicking on anything. I'm like, if this is my, I'm vegan, you know, like, I tried everything I can. I'm like, if this is my one thing, I'll take that on the chin. Like, I don't do drugs, yes. You know, like, I pay my taxes. I'm very squeaky with everything that I do. So this is my one thing, and I'll allow it.
You go to the charity shop, Kiri. You make it rain in the charity shop.
How worthy am I making myself sound? If my one thing is going to charity shops every now and then I think I'll allow it. Obviously, I'm also, like, bidding on things last minute and stealing them from people on eBay. Are you into secondhand shopping, thrifting? You mentioned car boots earlier. I love a car boot. Is that your vibe?
I loved a car boot when I was younger. Not as keen on the early mornings as an adult. I do, yeah. I love a trawl around the vintage shops. However, you know, the size privilege there means that I myself at a... well, I'm going to say 16, 18. 18 on the bottom, 16 on the top. I can maybe find a couple of bits from a day's worth of vintage shopping, but anyone in a larger size is fucked. So charity shops are also where it's at. But, I don't know. Like you said, I do follow trends to an extent. So it's the secondhand apps are where it's at, because I'm picking up those things that people bought when they didn't really love them, and they're like, oh, this still has the tags on it, let me sell it, and I'll have that.
Yeah. So what's the best thing that you've ever thrifted or got secondhand then?
I have a vintage Guess denim patchwork jacket. It's cropped. It has like a patch of bright pink, a patch of striped blue, a patch of yellow, and it's like the style that came out like last year, but it's genuine vintage and it's like an extra large, which to find in a vintage is impossible. And that came from Vinted, I think. Yeah. So that's a winner.
That sounds absolutely incredible. Do you know what? I heard something really interesting about vintage clothes, because obviously you're so right. I love vintage. I like that you're probably going to be the only person with that thing. I love that feeling. And why there's so few options wasn't that women our size and bigger didn't exist. It's that clothes were expensive and you wore them. And because they were more expensive because there was more fabric, you just wore them until they absolutely perished. Which also, there's a part of me that's like, well, that's joyous because it means that women were only getting clothes they really loved and wearing them to death. Like, which is what we should all do with all of our clothes is, so standing on the shoulders of sustainable bigger women. That's what we are. It's so nice.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Rakuten. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Samsung, Expedia, and Sephora. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Final bit I want to talk to you about is the future of your style and your journey with fashion. Now your style, you've been through pure emo, you've been through the like unicorn stage and then softening and now you're this like really bang on trend block colour, you know, but then these masculine shapes as well, just playing with everything. It's so brilliant. Do you see your style constantly evolving, or do you think you've settled in something that's eclectic enough that it'll look as banging when you're 80?
I think my dream for when I'm older is to do the complete simplistic, minimal, do not give a fuck, beige everything, like just I am genuinely looking forward to a time where I do not need to invest this much energy into my appearance for the sake of my career or like the internet. Or when I get there, I don't know if the hair will be shaved off or if it will just go back to natural and just that, you know, capsule wardrobe life. That is the goal.
So when you say that, are you thinking, and it's only the shaved head that's thrown me, are you going for that like stripped down sort of almost how fashion designers dress, where it's like very simple and it's, you know, it's blacks, whites and not much else? Or are you talking about, because you mentioned beige, are you talking full polyester crimpoline like beige uniform of women in old people's homes? I can't, because the shaved head would look absolutely banging with either one of those.
I don't know. In my head, it's more leaning towards the first one, but then actually that's like a proper money look, isn't it? That's like, I have so much money and I'm so successful that all I am is just clean lines.
So with your stripped down kind of chic style that you're heading towards much later when you don't have to care, is there an item of clothing, and that again it can be an item like jeans or a specific thing that you own, is there an item of clothing that you can always see yourself wearing?
I want to say crop tops. I don't think I'm letting them go. Like, it took so long to embrace them into my life. I can't let them go again.
That's so gorgeous. It's that's such a, like, beautifully, as I expect from you, thoughtful and emotional response. But the fact that it's about the word crop top in there, the way you're talking about it is like an estranged sister. It's so gorgeous.
We were separated at birth, and you know, the long search for her.
If Cilla Black was still alive, she would have been reuniting you on her Christmas episode. That's you in a crop top. As someone who dabbles in the old trends, is there any trends that you're like, I'd be quite happy if that never came back ever again?
Oh, well, I feel like this is going to be a very popular answer, but I'm not here for low-rise jeans.
It's a very popular answer, yes.
Yeah. What the fuck? Who's done this?
I know. Do you know what? The last tour I did on Sunday, I had a bit about low-rise boot cuts coming back. And just also, because they were so low when we were growing up that there was no real option to have pubic hair. Like, you know, some of those Christina and Britney videos where you're like, I remember thinking, oh my God, I must have really weird pubes because you'd be able to see mine in those. And it was like, no, I just didn't really, I was kind of too young to understand that they were waxed within an inch of their lives. And that's not how, like, that's not how bodies look. But whoever signed that off has got, is a real violence, to be honest.
It truly is. And also, just from a heat perspective, if I'm not letting go of crop tops, I cannot also then incorporate low-rise jeans because my midsection will freeze.
Final question, and it could be a sad one, but it's meant to be uplifting. What outfit would you like to be buried, cremated in?
Can I say naked?
Oh my God, you absolutely can.
It's better for the environment if I'm being cremated. I fucking love being naked. You know, I'm not saying like open casket where everyone has to walk past my naked corpse.
It's what she would have wanted.
I think it's the most in keeping, isn't it, with my brand to die naked and be burned naked.
Burned like the witch that she was, naked.
Exactly that.
Megan Jane Crabb there. Oh, I really love her. She's just got a very beautiful heart and brain all wrapped up. It's a very colourful bang-on-trend clothing. Now, I am super aware and feeling very self-conscious about the chat that we had. I appreciate I'm a very privileged woman, and obviously talking about my discomfort with visibility and sustainability, well, I'm just worried I sound like an absolute brat. But the reason I've kept it in and not been an absolute coward is because I have these chats about the pressure and how difficult I find it so frequently, but it's always behind closed doors with friends, and that's friends who do similar jobs and friends who do different jobs. So I thought I'd keep it in because I just felt one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast was to have very honest, open conversations about clothes and fashion and bodies and style, and that was one of them, and I would be an utter coward to just cut it out because I thought someone's going to give me shit on the internet. So it's in there. And do you know what? I know I monologue for far too long about my hair on this episode, but she did ask, so thank you so much for people who've been getting in touch in the last few weeks. I had loads of really beautiful messages of people finding the podcast and binging through it and really enjoying the conversations. I think this series has been incredible. There's been like really demonstrable tips to take away, but also just really big chats about the important stuff, which I love so much because obviously clothes and fashion can feel quite frivolous, but I think this podcast does a really good job of never being that frivolous, which is hard when you're talking about something as daft as clothes. A great example of the kind of messages I've been getting, Nettie on Instagram said, of last week's episode with the fantastic Porna Bell. Well, this and every episode of Who Are You Wearing Pod has been great. If you're in need of absorbing chats with fascinating guests, have a listen. I reckon I've taken something away from every single one. That's how I feel as well. When we're having the chats, I'm like, oof, this is juicy stuff. Like, I'm going to remember that sentence or that fact or that point of view for the rest of my life. And so much of this stuff sticks with me. So I'm glad you guys feel the way. If you want to get in contact, you can message us on Instagram at whoyouwearingpod. You can also message us via email at whoyouwearingpod@gmail.com. Weird way to say it, .com. .com. Now, I've had a lot of back and forth in this episode about which direction to take the indie business in. For Megan's such an interesting style prospect. First of all, I was thinking about the colourful, like, comfies, and I was like, oh, Mama Established would be a really good fit for that. But Megan and I both share the same sort of attitude and challenges and privileges when it comes to shopping for plus size secondhand clothes. So I've gone for Rumi. So Rumi is a London-based market for plus size clothing that was established by Jamie Fallon. So Rumi Market, you'll find them on Instagram. It's ROOMY.MKT. So Rumi, basically, it's a plus size, pre-loved London shopping event. And people bring down, basically they do wardrobe edits of all their stuff and go, you know what, this does not spark joy anymore. I'm going to release it to the universe. And they get given a stall and a pitch. People buy tickets to come along. I think it's very low cost, though. It's like £3 in advance or £4 on the door. And everything in there is going to be size 16 and over. And the stuff that people are parting with is like in brilliant nick, and it's brilliant brands as well. There's a really interesting piece in Vogue about it saying that it was such a feel-good shopping event because so many of the folk who are made to feel marginalised or excluded from fashion or clothing, like, it's an unusual thing to get all those people in a room together, and it ends up being absolutely joyous because I'm sure there's people listening to this who, like me, love clothes, love style, love fashion, but so often are... In fact, do you know what? I've just shared, sorry to be gross, a reel of my stand-up about this, about how we're banished to one small corner with T-shirts with something French written on the front of it. Because it's nuts. Why do they think we all love cold shoulder tops? It's so, so bonkers. So to find things like Rumi Market, where you can go along and get pre-loved clothes in your size that are really great quality and not just the same old floral sort of polyester tents, can only be a good thing. So you can follow their Insta, as I said, Rumi.mkt, for more details of their next event. They pop up all over. They're usually somewhere that has great food and drink as well. So you can go along and have just a nice shopping experience. Imagine that, guys. I'll be back next week with the final episode of this series. It's a bit of a different one because it is a live show that we recorded at Machynlleth Comedy Festival 2023. And I'm chatting to comedian and writer and actor Alison Spittle. Oh, it's a really good chat. And a perfect way to end the series. I'm getting quite sad. Oh, coming to the end of the series. Guys, I'll see you for the last time next week.
Who Are You Wearing is produced by Joe Southard, the artwork is by Mary Phillips, and the music is by Annie Glass. This has been a Little Wonder production.